You may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is John Richards, and I'm here on behalf of Philip Ettinger, who owns a parcel of land on Chincoteague Island, known in this litigation as Parcel E. If I may, I'd like to reserve 4 minutes. In this case, came about because Mr. Ettinger's neighbors, a property owners association, decided to throw a construction fence between him, his property, and Hibiscus Drive to prevent him from proceeding with his development of the property.
So did this fence pretty much just go down Hibiscus Drive?
Yes.
Okay.
They put a no trespassing sign on it. They did it unilaterally. And they claimed ownership to the road, and because I admitted it from my brief, I want to give the court the citation to this. It's in paragraph 51 of our complaint, which was admitted. In supposed justification of its illegal trespass, the OBC2 POA has asserted that it is the true owner of all of Hibiscus Drive, with the right to deny Mr. Ettinger access to Parcel E over Hibiscus Drive. And the POA has taken that position in published minutes of the association, as well as in written correspondence with Mr. Ettinger. That's at page 21 and 22 of the joint appendix.
So whether their admission is factually true or their argument on brief to us is factually true, we can't decide. It's a factual question. Right, wrong reason is inapplicable. Is that your point?
The point I was trying to make with that observation, Your Honor, is that much of their brief in opposition to our appeal is based on contradicting the assertions that they took below.
Right.
And
therefore, we can't take their version of the facts on appeal because no fact finders actually resolve that.
Right.
Okay.
So the heart of our appeal is that this court has, for centuries, said that when you have a conveyance of a piece of property by an owner that owns both sides of a road, it goes to the middle of the road. And the complaint in this case was basically drafted from your opinion in Martin versus Gardner in 2013, which repeats that point and most recently. The trial court.
That rule of law is a fairly old rule of law, but it also contains the provision that if it's a boundary, if it's bound to that that road, that it goes to the center. That's correct. And unless there is manifested a contrary intention. And it seems to me your argument is that rule of law has been tried and true for years and years and years. There's another rule of law that the worst way to describe the property is by a deed or an acreage description. And those two are in conflict in this case, and there isn't any other manifest intention to the contrary.
Correct.
So all of these deeds in 72, 74, 75, 78, 2009, all of that, it all comes down, as far as you're concerned, to the description in the deed itself. And the law, in your view, says it goes to the middle of the road. There's no contrary indication. And the trial judge favored a description that was based upon acreage.
Absolutely.
It's a lot of paper to this point.
I confess of citing more cases than I probably could have.
That's your duty. You have to represent your client the best way you know how. I'm just trying to figure out if it's simpler.
And speaking strictly for myself, I'm not going to fault you for thoroughness. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you. So that is the point, Judge. There was an argument made for the first time in the opposition brief that, because it's the reference to an actual plat. That doesn't, that allows us to bring it back to the edge of the plat line. But this court has said in at least two cases, that would be Williams and Durbin, that if you do it by reference to a plat, it still goes to the middle of the road, even if it's outside the plat
line. Well, we've said more than two times you can't raise it for the first time on appeal.
Yes, Judge, that as well. There were a number of issues that were raised for the first time in the opposition brief. I do think that they should have been raised as affirmative defenses if they were going to be litigated in the case. They weren't. I think they were waived. I think they're also completely meritless. The suggestion that this piece of property was in the town of Chincoteague in 1972 is without any support whatsoever. And I think both the materials that were in the record and the materials that this court can properly take judicial notice of show that to a fairly well. And if anybody has any question about that, I'm happy to go through that. There was also this interesting question of, oh, well, did Mr. Ettinger give the property away in 2010, 2014? And that actually gave me a little bit of pause until I went back and looked at the plat. I know that the town doesn't claim that they have any interest to this road. That's not in the record, but certainly after they made the argument in the brief.
Well, now that issue as well is raised for the first time on appeal.
Yes, absolutely. If anybody has any questions, I think the position that we've taken has been pretty well set out in the briefs.
All right, you have 8 minutes left.
Thank you.
And may it please the court, my name is Jeannie Lauer, and I represent the appellee in this case, Oyster Bay 2 Property Owners Association. It appears that the best point to start in all of this is to remind the court of its prior edict that, to paraphrase, the prevailing party, which was Oyster Bay, seeks to enforce the trial court's judgment, not necessarily its reasoning. In this case, it's not an issue of our seeking to preserve an issue for appeal. We are the appellee. Did, of course, prevail below. And so,
right, but if you're offering additional grounds for affirmance that weren't raised below that depend on factual development, I don't see how we can reach those because we just don't, you know, the court didn't weigh the facts. There was no adversarial presentation of those discrete points at the trial. So here we are on appeal. I don't know when the Chincoteague expanded, contracted, annexed, whatever. So it's an interesting point, and I understand you're the appellee, but I'm not sure factually how I can get to any of that.
Well, I think, Judge, and that was the point, is that the way that this case comes before this court is through the motion for summary judgment that was filed on behalf of Ettinger. And what he said was to the court, the trial court, we have all of the facts necessary for you to make a determination as to whether or not Parcel E includes ownership to the center of Hibiscus Road. And in doing that, cited the proposition that it was bounded by Hibiscus in the description in the deed. Therefore, the rule applied.
But did you admit in your responsive pleadings that you were making a claim of right to the road, that the POA was claiming ownership of the road?
We asserted, Judge, that yes, we had repeatedly claimed that the entirety of Hibiscus Road at that point. And
why wouldn't judicial estoppel be the end of that debate anyway? You can't plead something and then try to prove something else, even for the first time on appeal.
That's true. My point was not as to the issue of judicial estoppel. My point was as to the way in which the issue had to be raised, which was in order that the court has said, this court has said, that to apply the bounded rule, you have to establish, first of all, that the grantor who gave you the property or its predecessors in title had ownership of that property in order to be able to convey that. But that was his burden under a summary judgment.
Right.
Okay. He moved the court to say, That's my property. And so it was his job to ensure that the record established, without a doubt, as the only fact, that that property in 1975 was owned by the predecessor in title who conveyed Parcel E. My brief merely points out that while at the trial court level we established, one, that Oyster Bay 2 owned that property and we believed had superior paper title, and therefore the rule would not apply because we owned it. How could he own it if our contention was that we did? This
but
merely
how could we say on appeal that you don't own it?
This merely seeks to point out that, in fact, the record does not support, as he continues on with the argument that he has established the bounded by the road, he hasn't established that. Where in the record does it tell you that in 1975, when Parcel E was given to Woodrow Marriott, that First Chincoteague Corporation still owned Hibiscus Road? That was the issue that it was his job to prove, and all that my brief has sought to establish, in addition to the fact that we claimed at the trial court level that he didn't own it because we owned it and we had superior paper title, was to, again, this proposition that you, since you can look at exactly the same record that the trial court can look at and can consider exactly the same evidence, because theoretically that is the complete record that you need to make this distinction, I point out that he didn't carry his burden, so the judge would have been correct, because whatever he based it on when he looked at those records, he didn't establish an ownership interest. And I postulate that there are a variety of theories. And I didn't raise the Accomack, Town of Chincoteague issue, until it popped up in his opening brief. There had been no discussion, and you can see it from the record. There had been absolutely no discussion at all about whether this was a town of Chincoteague or a county of Accomack at the time of the original conveyance issue. It had never been considered by the trial court. Again, he moved for summary judgment, but that was not an issue that was made relevant to the court. So I point, when he says it's Accomack, I note that we clearly know it's now the town of Chincoteague. Nobody disputes the fact that this is now part of the town of Chincoteague. But again, my brief responds to the issue he raises for the first time, which is you have to look at common law in setting the stage. And the County of Accomack didn't have a subdivision law at the time.
Well, on that legal question, how do you deal with Williams and Durbin, those two cases that appellant cites and that you don't respond to?
Oh, Judge, I'm sorry, did you finish the question?
Yeah.
I don't believe that either the Williams or the Durbin case are relevant to these particular facts. If I recall, the Williams case involved the Lot 1 determination. It was referred to as a Lot 1, and it was referred to being bounded by. Everyone agreed that it was bounded by, but then in the third iteration of transferring title, it was the bounded by language was eliminated and it was just referred to as Lot 1. And the court said, well, we know what they intended. There it wasn't that it was just recognition of a parcel. That it wasn't analogous to this particular case. And similarly, where the court analogized to, as indicated by a survey by Kay Saylor, that was a reference to the quantity of land that was on the survey. This is a completely different case. Parcel E didn't exist prior to its very first conveyance out in 1975 to Mr. Ettinger's predecessors in title. There were a number of parcels, either three or four, that made subdivision A, subdivision B, subdivision D, C, subdivision D, and parcel E. They were all amassed together. And then a plat was made, which laid these particulars out. Parcel E had not existed before. There was a subdivision plat of record. And that's what the priority of analysis of the deed tells us. You look at whether or not there is a specific titling of the property. Parcel E has a nomenclature. It has a tax number. It has clear parameters listed on a recorded subdivision plat. So it's not just that it's bounded, and it's not just that there's a quantity issue. The different reference points are unique to this deed description that you will not find in any of that prior case law.
Counsel, can you help me make sense of the court's comment on page 259 of the appendix where the court says, I'm finding parcel E was part of the subdivision of the 51 acres. So how does that, I mean, didn't the court actually find that the predecessor in title, you know, sold these off? And so, in other words, the timing that you're, that seems to be at the root of your argument of when subdivision E was parceled off, doesn't seem to square with the court's understanding of the record, but maybe I'm mistaken.
Well, this court, of course, has the fundamental. I don't know if the court meant that it was part of the subdivision, because we all agreed that if you're talking about Oyster Bay 2 and its four particulates, then which are is a subdivision, parcel E is not part of that subdivision.
Right.
And what I think the court was talking about, and actually read from a case, was that it was part of the subdivision map. When it established a subdivision map, and the court said that anything which was on that subdivision map, which didn't even have to mean that it was a parcel owned by that person who described parcels A through D, he was referring to its appearance on the subdivision plat as a whole, as that conferring that easement right, and that's when he was referring it to as being part of the subdivision, but as part of the subdivision plat, not as one of the four parts that forms the Oyster Bay 2 Property Owners Association.
Right. So at this stage of the proceeding, what is the position of Oyster Bay 2 Community POA as to who owns Hibiscus Road?
At this point in time, Your Honor, we continue to believe that Oyster Bay 2 is the sole owner of the property.
Of the road, of the drive.
Of Hibiscus Drive,
so
as well as all of the other roads that are within subdivisions A, B, C, and D.
Okay, so it was never dedicated at any point to the municipal government.
I think the record fails to establish. The fact that we believe that we own it, unfortunately, is not sufficient to make it true. You ask me what our position is, that's our position. But if you are asking me as a matter of law whether there's been a finding that it was never properly dedicated to either the town of Chincoteague or to the county of Accomack, I can't make that statement based on the record.
So the appellant says that the road was owned by you and the boundary principle, centerline boundary principle applies. You say the boundary, the drive is owned by you, but you want us to accept the right result, wrong reason that the road is not owned by you. It's owned by the municipal government.
I want you to, you don't have to make a determination as to whether or not it's owned by the municipal government or by my client or by the other adjoining owners to Hibiscus Drive. The only thing that was brought forward in this case is whether or not Mr. Ettinger had established his ownership of the center line. And
which presupposes your ownership of the drive as opposed to someone else's ownership of the drive.
Which could be our ownership, which could be third parties.
And you pled you did own it, and you just stated in the appellate court that's your position. So isn't this just round and round?
No, Judge, I don't think it's round and round. I'm not endeavoring to have the court make a finding in my favor. I'm endeavoring to defend what was ultimately the judgment of the court, which was that Parcel E does not own any portion of Hibiscus Drive, and whether or not I own it, or whether or not Oyster Bay 2 does, or somebody else, or the municipality does, that finding isn't necessary for you to determine whether or not the court was correct in making that determination. Even the paucity of the record, if it wasn't adequately developed and proved for this court that there was an ownership interest that could have been conveyed to Ettinger's predecessors in title. then he can't prevail, because that's one of the two prongs. One, you have to have possession of that property, and two, it has to be bounded, and using that language with no other contradictory statements. And what is contradiction in and of itself is if the description is of parcel E, subdivision D, with a line, includes all of Hibiscus. The streets are all laid out in the subdivision. The lines couldn't be any clearer when you plat just those portions of it. So whether that's because it ended up being dedicated to a municipality or it was still owned by the underlying property owners association doesn't change the fact that the references in the deed all conform to the idea that parcel E does not own to the center of the road.
The court said if that's true, then the parcel's landlocked.
And
is that right?
Yes, that's true.
So then the court gives a right-of-way.
That's correct.
Okay. But why would a buyer or a conveyor intend to convey a landlocked parcel?
It wasn't landlocked, Your Honor. And you can look at the deeds and see that the trial court erred in that conclusion, and I think that's conceded in the brief of the appellant as well, that it was not, in fact, landlocked.
Okay. Counsel, I have to smile here because this last colloquy has shown why we make a center-of-the-road presumption. The center-of-the-road presumption is indeed there so that all parcels can have access to a way. Doesn't have to be a public way, or eventually it will become a public way, but it's the policy reason is pretty clear. You rely very significantly on the recorded plat, and you cite Providence in doing so. And I think that you, and Providence actually, that law was then explained further 10 years later in the Spainauer case. You don't cite it, your opposing counsel does. But it's interesting because when you look at the hierarchy in those, in particularly in Spainauer, you see that the reason that it is set that way is because of essentially a battle of the experts between surveyors when there were two drastically different surveys. And that happens a lot out there in, less so probably in Chincoteague than in the mountains. Spainauer talks about a pipe being set in a chestnut swamp. And then the question was, from there, do you follow the courses and distances that were measured by, I guess at the time, by Gunter's chain, or do you instead look at the total the total number of square feet? And it gives you a hierarchy on how to do that. When you look at this plat, there's nothing in the plat that contradicts the presumption, the center of the road presumption. Now, a plat can be very valuable for that purpose. If you could have looked at either of these plats and seen a disclaimer of the center of the road presumption, but without that, we simply have to fall back on the law as we expressed it in Martin v. Garner. Now, that's how I analyze it. Where do I go wrong in saying that? What is your critique of that that would cause me to change my mind?
Judge, I see my time has expired. May I still respond? I certainly wouldn't assume to critique
I've been wrong on many occasions. You can critique me all you
learn
want.
No,
you've
just
never been wrong.
You're still so polite.
But so I think
I'm
what
very
we
sensitive.
Have... Excuse me. I think what we have here is an evolution of competing... lines of wisdom. We had a doctrine that served us for a long period of time in certain instances, which had to do with the bounded by a road. However, since the early 1900s, we have been moving along the lines of subdivision law, which clearly identifies for individuals what their respective rights and obligations are. It's why we have a community, why we have a property owners association. It's why in 1942 we had the Subdivided Land Sales Act. It's why we have the Condominium Act. Because it allows us to firmly fix the parameters that are going to be established when one subdivides property into lots, and it allows us to use some common law presumptions but not others. In this case, the subdivision is A, B, C, and D, and it is inclusive of alleys and walkways and streets. And those are among the obligations of the association to maintain, and those belong to the association. And Platt tells us that that's where the ownership is based on the subdivision and the subdivision law that existed at the time.
You know, I appreciate your answer, and if we were talking about a subdivision in the city of Norfolk or Henrico County, I think I would potentially agree with that. But there was no subdivision ordinance in the county at the time that this was created. Is that correct?
There was not a subdivision ordinance in the county. There was a subdivision requirement in the town of Chincoteague. And this is property in the town of Chincoteague, and this
was
is town.
Was it in the town of Chincoteague when the first plat was recorded?
It was within the 1 mile requirement found.
So it's still within the county.
It's still within the town. The charter of the town of Chincoteague says that with regard to subdivision plats and streets, and it's noted in my brief, that within the town limits and within 1 mile of the town limits, they have the additional authority with regard to the platting of streets.
Did they exercise the authority in this instance? Did the initial individual who first recorded a plat have to go down to the planning office of the town of Chincoteague and get them to stamp it saying, we have reviewed and approved this, you may now record it?
That wasn't the law at the time, is my understanding, Your Honor, but we don't know that from the record. And again, that wasn't my burden to establish.
I'm looking at a recorded plat that doesn't have that. And I typically, when I see a recorded plat, I'm typically going to look for the stamp of the surveyor, stamped and signed, and then I'm going to look for the stamp of the locality, saying, we have reviewed this, it is being recorded consistent with subdivision ordinance, and then they tell you what it is. And you can then go to the subdivision ordinance and use that as an additional rule, or as potentially the highest rule that we would look to. We don't have that here. So this is almost like we were at the beginning of the 20th century. We have essentially competing surveys is what it amounts to. And we have a presumption, and I don't see anything that overcomes the presumption. I fall back on Martin v. Garner because that's our most recent law, and I don't see anything that overcomes Martin v. Garner.
Judge, as I said, I believe in this case the Subdivided Land Sales Act, which was in effect at the time, as well as the town charter, which didn't necessarily require the same degree of formality that we currently observe with regard to the recording of subdivision plats, would have still governed what happened with this property. And again, that degree of ownership that could have conveyed that interest in the property was incumbent upon the moving party at the trial court level and on his motion for summary judgment.
Okay, thank you for this discussion.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Rebuttal.
Yes, Your Honor. The suggestion was made that the first time Parcel E was created was when it was conveyed out to Mr. Marriott, and that's simply not the case. The stipulation records, and that's Joint Appendix 67, paragraph 5, and Joint Appendix 85 to 97, that the Parcel E was created when First Chincoteague platted the entire subdivision.
That was 72?
That was in 1972. It was first conveyed out
I thought the court got at that on pages 249 and 250 in the context of its overall discussion, that wasn't even really an issue, I thought.
I agree. It shouldn't be an issue. It isn't an issue. It was stipulated to. The reference to the town charter extending for 1 mile outside of the town, that only says that the person doing the subdivision needs to go and present it to the town. It doesn't say that the town has the authority over subdivisions outside of the town. And there is a presumption of regularity. There is a case.
Is that charter, I mean, where would we find that?
It's published online. I do have the link in the brief.
Okay.
At that point in time, it would have been the charter from...
It just struck me as anomalous that you would have authority over the land of the adjoining jurisdiction as opposed to an informative kind of thing.
Right. It is informative. That's what it calls for. It doesn't allow them to take any of the other advantages of a subdivision ordinance on property outside of their jurisdiction. And furthermore, to the best of my knowledge, the town of Chincoteague didn't adopt the subdivision ordinance until 1987.
And the county, when did the county adopt the subdivision ordinance?
It was adopted on May 1st, 1973.
Okay.
So it's very clear that it was established beforehand. And I also like to point out, this plat actually has a center line drawn on it. So if there's any kind of, thing to be drawn from the plat about, whether there's a center line or not, there is a center line on the plat. And I think that is completely consistent with the law on this topic. And if there aren't any other questions, I'd...
All right. Thank you very much. Call the next case.